Between the greenhouse gases and earth spinning off its axis, got Mother Nature doing backflips, the natural disasters. It's like 80 degrees in Alaska, you in trouble if you're not in Onassis. It ain't hard to tell if the conditions is drastic. Just turn on the telly, check for the new.
That is the title track from the new Roots album, Rising Down. You say The Roots to most rap fans, and they'll go, oh yeah, The Roots, they're good. You say The Roots to a fan of music in general, talk to the guy you know with the most eclectic taste, and he'll get all spasmodic and start going, oh, The Roots! Questlove, we love The Roots! And we say something like, Ian, calm the hell down.
Spasmodic. I'm putting that one in my Questsaurus. Spasmodic.
And that is Questlove, the drummer and producer of this Welcome. He's here in the studio. Thanks for coming in, Questlove.
How are you? How you doing?
Shall I call you Questlove?
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Questlove is fine.
Excellent. So that's Rising Down. That's the title track, right?
Yes, that's the title
and
track.
And also on the album is a song called Rising Up. And I read that the kind of concept behind the album, or at least a jumping off point, was that William Vollman book, Rising Up, Rising Down. Now, that book's 3,500 pages.
Yeah, that's more of a reference book.
Yes.
I mean, there's a bridged, condensed version of it. But pretty much, yeah, it's a hard read.
Yeah.
You must have a lot of time on your hands if you go.
I mean, you know, the first 1,800 pages are a little slow, but then it really kicks in.
Well, my manager claims to have read it once or twice, so. Wow.
Do you ever quiz him on it?
That's how I know he's crazy.
So what ideas did you take out of the book that we hear?
I mean,
the,
really, it's just pretty much a study in violence, in short, the sort of psychological effects of how violence, how a human being comes to violent means. And pretty much the album and sort of its political hand really deals with how humans tend to use violence before anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're from Philadelphia, unfortunately, which holds the tag of the murder capital.
It's one of the most murderous cities
of the
US.
United States.
Yeah.
And it's just that, I don't know, I've been really shocked at hip-hop sort of lack of, or just their whole apolitical stance right now.
Or,
whereas 20 years ago, this would have been just a normal record by The Roots.
Right.
You know?
And yeah, you know, we've gotten away from Public Enemy being really political, and
exactly.
We've gotten to, in fact, you know, a little ambivalence, but without claims of being victims and perpetrating violence, where would 50 Cent's career be? You know, and a lot of
these
other rappers.
Yeah, his life is almost like, you know, I mean, sort of, you know, you go to Six Flags and you want to get on, or you go to Brigantine Castle. Oh, did I just date myself with that one?
Dorney Park in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like a thrill thing, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty much, I mean, you could take it as entertainment, although I tend to see the microscope that most hip-hoppers are under, sort of the art imitating life dichotomy, as opposed to, oh yeah, Schwarzenegger, he's just an actor, but in real life he's a father and
it
yada,
does
yada,
it
yada.
Does seem weird that, you know, right, actors who are in action movies don't feel like they have to, you know, either commit crimes or save people from burning buildings,
right.
But there's, well, the embrace of it to some extent. People probably feel forced into it also.
Well, my main problem is mainly rappers really aren't seen as three-dimensional people.
Yeah,
it's more seen like one-dimensional entertainment, and that's it. So if anything, I think that was like one of the biggest struggles of this record, like trying to paint three-dimensional pictures of ourselves so that you see that we're humans and not just, you know, cussing and be cussing.
When you do interviews like this, do you feel that you often get questions where they kind of ask you to answer for the genre in a way that, like, we'd never ask Pearl Jam to answer for Avril Lavigne or something like that?
I'm so used to it, but I think at the end of the day, if someone can break it down to, you know, a very simple fraction, then maybe people will have a better understanding of the old psychological effect of how people, you know, operate, especially my generation. And, you know, a lot of people gauge their whole opinion on, especially with black people, on just the entertainment they see. So, you know, a lot of times I find myself in that position where I got to answer for everybody.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's cool, sometimes it's not, you know, like the particular a so-called Oprah witch hunt, that two-day rap special that she did.
Yeah.
You know, what Common had to answer for everybody. Like, you know, I didn't particularly like that.
It definitely all depends on the context and where it's coming from. But, you know, we just heard on the track we played, I don't know if too many other rappers are talking about greenhouse gases. I don't know if too many other rappers are talking about, you know, these world issues.
Well, one day we woke up and we found out that we were the top 10 green groups of Oh, really?
Is that something you set out to do?
We are. Well, no, we've done so many. Like, a lot of, I mean, the perception of us being political more or less has to do with the fact that, I guess since 1993 when we first started, up until now, like, we've done like a lot of political activity sort mm-hmm. of off the record, you know. Mm-hmm. We really haven't brought our politics to our albums probably until our ninth album, Game Theory, because the sort of hip hop that we were sort of raised on was more or less about the sport of it, like battle MC lyrics and that type of thing, and the whole angle of us being a band sort of overshadowed any other agenda that we had. So we weren't necessarily political. If anything, we were political by default because we weren't, you know, misogynistic or talking about just regular gunplay stuff. So people thought, oh, the Roots are political. But in essence, we really haven't gotten that political since our last record. So
Then again, the timing of the last record came out when 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, so the world's changed a lot since when you were first putting out records during the Clinton administration.
Oh, a lot.
And
yeah.
Wars, I mean, going on, and things are a little different. But speaking of wars, it's not just, you know, America at war. I said you were one of the few groups singing about greenhouse gases. You're also singing about, you know, child soldiers in Africa. This is a song called Singing Man, mm-hmm. and it's about maybe someone in Charles Taylor's army or an army exactly. like that. Let's hear some of that.
Right. 1 foot of crescent, 2 foot of cross, 3 foot of blessing, 4 foot of lost kid holding a weapon. Walk like a corpse in the face of transgression. Military issue collision, a covert or machete or a pitchfork. He killing cause he feel he got nothing to live for. In a war taking heads for men like Charles Taylor. And never see the undisclosed foreign arms dealer. 13-year-old killer, he looked 35. He changed his name to Little No Man Survive. When he smoked that leaf, showed he believed he could fly. He loot and terrorize and shoot between the eyes. Who to blame? It's a shame the youth was demonized, wishing he could rearrange the truth, to see the lies, and he wouldn't have to raise his barrel to target you. His heart can't get through the years of scar tissue.
Days are living fast, moons of misery. You got a song you wanna sing for me? Sing a song, singing man.
Had the topic come up? It's something you wanted to sing about.
Actually, that song, Singing Man, is probably the emotional centerpiece of the record. We were hired to play Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. The day after the incident, mm-hmm. quote unquote, the incident went down, and we kind of wanted to put our approach on only because we were so close to it. Like, we were like on our way to that campus, and then we found out the show's canceled, so we just went home. So pretty much, I'll say this song was created about maybe 2 or 3 weeks after the incident, and one of the strangest things is that you find yourself in a position of wanting to talk about a situation, but normally when we were talking about incidents of this level, it was always like in the third person sense where you're like looking from the window and you're saying what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of wanted to make this like one of the first songs in which we're actually doing it in first person. But then you don't want to look like you're glorifying it because you're doing it first person. So then,
yeah, people can misinterpret that.
Right.
And it's a headache more than anything.
Yeah. So at the last minute, we figured out a clever way to sort of paint the picture in first person. And what we did was we told three stories. Verse one is the story of a campus shooter. Verse two is of a child being sort of reared into an army. But that can also be the story of any child in South Central Los Angeles, mm-hmm. you know, that can't avoid gang culture. And the third verse is about a suicide bomber. So we kind of wanted to paint a picture, or, you know, show you a movie or a scene of three different characters that felt that their violence was justified. But we didn't want to glorify it, so it was a real tricky to do, but we managed to.
But then, again, I hear you coming back to the idea of that what Volman was saying in Rising Up, Rising Down is that society is creating the violence, and then that's the rising down, no, rising up, and then
right.
the people instilled with this violence all around them, they in turn become violence, and you know it's triggered by society. And yeah. You hear it there in the song, and you talk about three different societies or parts of our society.
Exactly. You got it.
I think I did.
You did your homework. I'm proud of you, man. Other people are like, why? Why can't you guys just be happy? You know.
I wanted to ask you about playing live music, because we haven't even mentioned that. And if you can't tell from the record, you don't rap over beats or just do that. That sometimes you do that too. But you're always playing your live instruments. And there's a line on the song where you compare yourself. Oh, I want to get it right there. Yeah. Part Melly Mel and part Van Halen.
Oh, yes.
So what live groups or what rock groups or groups that play live instruments do you think are most influential on what we hear?
I mean, the problem with us is that since we're the last black band with a major record deal,
yeah,
we
really,
yeah, we're the last black group left. I mean, Dave Matthews technically a South African with four black people in the group. I mean, you know, that's probably second place. I think that in the beginning, when we first started, our whole thing was like, okay, well, we're the alternative to hip-hop. But then as, quote-unquote, purist hip-hop sort of took a dive, then we had to represent purist hip-hop. And then once the idea of a rap group, we're almost one of maybe five or six rap groups left also.
Mm-hmm.
Really three, but I'm technically giving Outkast a pass. Because they say they're still a group, even though you haven't seen them together in like 4 years.
And they do different sides of a
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Two-sided
like
disc,
they're so really yeah.
They're like a collective. Yeah,
yeah, collective. You're right. Now it's just to the point in 2008 where we basically have to represent just music.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
a big responsibility. It's a lot
yeah.
on your shoulders.
So I'm not even just saying like, okay, we're a hip hop band. Like we now have to be all those other groups that aren't around to be their competition anymore. You know, so. Yeah, we have to be Melly Mel and Van Halen
yeah.
at the same time.
And
actually, David Lee Roth is an extreme, immense, big fan of the group, which was
really?
Probably one of the most shocking things ever.
And if you ever just listen to him talk off the cuff, it's some version of freestyling. I don't know
if it yeah,
actually
yeah,
rhymes on, all the time. Look, there's one last thing I wanted to do, and I don't know if we have time for the clip, but you've been going around doing a couple things. You've been playing the national anthem, and you played that on the Colbert Show.
Right.
So that was, you know, little hints of Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And then you used the melody of the national anthem to sing Dylan's Masters of War.
Right.
Which is an amazing song. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess my question is, how'd you think of that? How'd you think of marrying the two if Dylan never did?
Actually, the very first verse of the Masters of War that I heard
yeah.
wasn't even Dylan's. My father had Leon Russell, singer-songwriter, you know, had his heyday in the 70s, early 80s, husband of Brenda Russell, Piano in the Dark. Anyway, I'm like a walking Wikipedia. He did a version of Masters of War in which he adapted the Star Spangled Banner to the lyrics. And he sang it in such a ironic way that that always stuck with me. So pretty much that was our, you know, I just married that version to Dylan's version.
Well, it's a great idea and it's great execution, and you could hear it on our blog. And we want to thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you
for being
thank
in
you for
here.
Having me.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Hey, that does it for this hour of the BPP. We are on digital FM, Sirius Satellite Radio, and we are always online at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Mike Pesca. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Number one place on the map, the generational gap, but yet another sensational track. And we don't stress for nothing. I just press the button. It's a simple, let's just make it. To all the frauds, stop faking, relax. And to the broads, if you can.